I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Thursday. Elizabeth Rosenthal has yet another in her very important series, Paying Till It Hurts, in the New York Times. It's a year-long series that she is writing, and we've interviewed her for each one of the articles. On July 2nd, she wrote about the price of prevention. Vaccine costs are soaring. We wanted to speak with her about this latest report, and we'll be welcoming phone calls. She looks at how much some of these vaccines used to cost, why some doctors are stockpiling them, why some doctors are not giving vaccines anymore because they can't afford them. She does a very long part of the article on Prevnar, and that's a very interesting story because it's very expensive. It took a long time to get on the market, and it requires more than one vaccination for this. So we'll be talking about that and the importance of vaccines and just a number of issues. But really, the major part here is why in the world the cost of vaccinations have gone from single digits, as she writes, to sometimes triple digits in the last two decades. Elizabeth has an interesting background. She is a doctor. She has an MD degree from Harvard Medical School. She trained at New York Hospital Cornell Medical Center, now New York Presbyterian Medical Center, in internal medicine, and worked in the emergency department there before becoming a full-time journalist. And for 20 years, she has covered all kinds of beats. She was in China for 6 years. She covers healthcare extensively, international environment, and general assignment reporting in China. And she's a frequent contributor to the New York Times Sunday Review section. My favorite part of the paper. Get a lot of show ideas from that section, I must confess. We'll be welcoming phone calls for Elizabeth. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Email is talk@wpr.org, and our Facebook page is the Kathleen Dunn Show. We're also on Twitter at K Dunn Show. Hello again, Elizabeth.
Hi, thanks for having me again.
Yeah, our pleasure. Thank you so much for being with us. You start the story, and I can almost imagine this doctor. So set the place for us, Dr. Lindsay Irvin, who really is stashing all of these vaccines in her refrigerator.
Yes, every pediatrician has a refrigerator full of vaccines. And Lindsay Irvin is a doctor in San Antonio, Texas, a private practice, solo practitioner, who contacted me because she was having trouble affording giving vaccines. And to her, as to many pediatricians, this is the essence of good pediatric care, good prevention. How can you not be able to afford this?
And you're right. I had no idea this was the case, Elizabeth. Some doctors, I'm wondering how many, don't offer vaccines anymore, the immunizations, because they can't afford to buy them?
Yes, you know, vaccines work on a funny model compared to other medicines. Other medicines you go to the drugstore and pick up. But obviously, for pediatric vaccines, you can't go to the drugstore. Most drugstores don't give pediatric vaccines anyway. And so the pediatricians have to stock them. And that means they have to buy them from the manufacturers. They have to store them, which is quite expensive because they're very temperature sensitive. There are a lot of national mandates about record keeping. And then they have to give them. And as Lindsay said to me, sometimes that means, you know, three people holding down a three-year-old. So, and they're not very well reimbursed. They're reimbursed for the cost of the vaccine, in theory, with a little bit of add-on for the administration fee. But many solo pediatric practices lose money each time they give a shot. And if you're talking about rationalizing what we pay for in healthcare to get good value, that doesn't make sense.
Yeah. You also write about some moms who are having a hard time finding anyone to vaccinate their children, and you need it to go to school usually.
Yes, I spoke to one mother, Brianna Ferris, who ended up at Dr. Irvin's office, but had said she'd called 10 other practices before finding someone who would give her son a vaccine. The problem is, if you're a pediatrician, you really can't not give, you have to give vaccines. But if you're a family practice doctor, you know, you may decide it's just not worth the trouble. It's a relatively small part of your practice. And you may say to people, as the Farris's doctor did, you're going to have to take your kids someplace else. Now, you know, for an adult vaccine, like for the shingles vaccine or for a flu vax, you could go to a pharmacy, so no big deal. But for a kid's vaccine, there are very few places that will give it. So you had to find a pediatrician. Now, pediatricians, in turn, if they're losing money on vaccines, they'll say, oh, I buy my vaccines for kids I know who are in my practice. It's hard for me to give them to everyone who walks in the door because I'm losing money. Right. And the public health clinics, likewise, that the Farris family also tried, said, look, we get these vaccines for kids who don't have insurance, so we're not going to use them for kids who do. So they were really caught in a bind. One of her kids last year, because it took so much trouble to get the vaccines, started kindergarten a week late. Now, that's, again, you know, that you don't want that happening.
Right. They're often, you write, more expensive to produce than conventional drugs, and they also can be very profitable. Why is it? Do they have to be more rigorously tested, Elizabeth, or what?
Well, they're biologics, so there are additional testing requirements. Also, you know, you're not giving them to someone who's sick. You're giving them to a healthy person. So you want to be, you know, double, triple sure that you're not going to harm the kid by giving them a vaccine. And, you know, traditionally, though, they were very cheap. And also, I would say you have to remember, unlike most medicines and aspects of medical care, because there were concerns about lawsuits and they wanted these vaccines to be rendered cheaply, the government basically took over liability for vaccine deaths or side effects. So there really isn't a malpractice issue or a liability issue here. Mm-hmm. But what we've seen over time is the cost of vaccinating a kid has gone from $100 20 years ago to over $2,000. And some of that is the addition of new vaccines, but some of it is increases in price of the old vaccines. And the new vaccines, when they come into the market, which is why we focused on Prevnar 13, come in at much higher prices than were ever previously even considered a possibility. I mean, we always used to think of vaccines as, you know, these dirt cheap things that did a lot of good. Well, they still do a lot of good, but they're no longer dirt cheap.
You spend a bit of time on Prevnar, and it's an interesting story, so let's go there. It's an unusual vaccine because it's not just a single shot, right? You cost, what did you say, $136 a shot, and you need four of them?
Yeah, most of the new vaccines do involve a series of shots. I mean, the HPV vaccine for against cervical cancer is a series of shots. So, yes, it's new. You know, I want to be very clear to anyone who's listening. Vaccines are generally a good thing. They prevent serious disease. Prevnar prevents infections that are caused by a kind of bacteria called the pneumococcal bacteria. Those can range from ear infections, which would probably get better with no treatment, to deadly pneumonias and meningitis. So it's good to be protected from those infections. But what's a reasonable cost, given that many of the infections that this bacteria will cause are not terribly serious? Mm-hmm. Some are.
Mm-hmm. And there aren't any generics for this. It's one company that makes this?
Yeah, this is one company in this country. In Europe, there's a second company that makes a similar vaccine. I should point out, too, because people will say, oh, I got a pneumococcal vaccine. The old pneumococcal vaccine that we have given to older people for years and years is a different form of pneumococcal vaccine. Mm-hmm. So what's new about Prevnar and what was truly innovative about Prevnar is the old pneumococcal vaccine didn't make for immunity in babies, so it couldn't be given to youngsters. So this vaccine is constructed in a different way. It's more complex to make, and so it does provoke good immunity in babies. So It is an important development, you know, no question about that. The question is, you know, again, if there's an important development that people are having trouble paying for and that the government is having trouble paying for, well, then how do we think about that?
Yeah. Well, also going back to that Prevnar, I can't remember who it was who said, you know, there. Understandably, it took a long time, a lot of testing to get this on the market, something like 13 years. It's effective, it's important, and yet the price never goes down on it. So you put a big outlay at the beginning, but eventually you make back your costs, right? So then what are you doing? You're just making a large profit, are you not?
Right. Well, you know, this is why in some other countries, I know Japan does this, the rule is that as technologies age, they get reimbursed less and less each year. The idea being that, you know, when something's new, you deserve to get a lot of money for it, but as it ages, maybe not. So the question I think that the pediatricians I spoke to who were upset about this, the thing that bothered them most was that the price of this particular vaccine has gone up an average of 6% a year.
Goodness.
In the last 4 years. So why is that? You know, there's nothing different about it. So why would the price be going up instead of down as it's used more and as it ages?
Well, Elizabeth, what is the answer to that question?
Well, it's the answer, I think, that, you know, is pervasive in our healthcare system, which is because they can. Mm-hmm. You know, we don't have a lot of price controls. We don't have a lot of mechanisms. Even if we say the market should control this, you know, when there's only one manufacturer, the market doesn't control it. Pediatricians, even the Medicaid program, which has its vaccines bought by the CDC, what negotiating power do you really have? You're not going to say, we're not going to vaccinate kids with Prevnar because you know it's useful and there's nothing else. So, you know, I think a lot of the pediatricians and the ones who contacted me originally were upset because they feel like they're over a barrel. You know, they get a notice saying the price is going to go up. Some years it's less, some years it's more. It's an average of 6%, but some years it'll be closer to 10%. Ooh. What are they going to say? No, we're not buying? They're not.
Right.
So
yeah.
They're stuck.
Yeah. And is it mandated in most states that you need Prevnar?
It's mandated for preschool or daycare. So, yes, if you're in preschool or daycare, you have to get Prevnar in most states. Not all, but most.
And that's an interesting process that you also write about. To say that something is a mandate is a good thing for people making the drugs, right?
Well, it gives you a really secure market. I mean, the process is that the vaccination committee of the CDC recommends different vaccinations, and then different states develop their mandates, either for preschool, daycare, or for school admission, depending on you know, the particular vaccine. And basically, once something is mandated, boy, you know, parents have to get it. People have to – they're going to get it, and they're going to pay what they have to get it. So it is a remarkable – you know, if we like to think that the market works, this is not really a free market. It's something that's required, and it's something that you want people to get. So you don't want to say, let's make this optional. So the question is, I guess, do we like the model we're using for ensuring that kids get vaccinated?
Yeah. I was noticing in today's paper there was an announcement of some kind of clinic taking place soon for young people to get their vaccinations. Are there a substantial number of, I assume it's a government program, because it's a part of the Affordable Care Act, too, and because of all these mandates, you can't go to school unless you have some of these immunizations. Do we have a system in place to take care of people who don't have any other way to get them but to go to a free clinic?
Well, there are public health clinics throughout the country. And, you know, the fact is that I think something like 50% of vaccines in this, childhood vaccines in this country, are purchased by the CDC and given to these clinics through the Vaccine for Children's program. Mm. So there are ways for people who don't have insurance to access them. But, you know, just because something is provided by the government or the CDC doesn't mean it's free. When you think about the cost of the federal government buying Prevnar for all the kids in America, boy, it makes a huge difference whether we're being charged, you know, $100 a dose or $20 a dose. The amount of money that we spend on vaccinations, we're not spending elsewhere.
And because the government is a big place, don't they get a better deal?
Well, the CDC does negotiate on vaccines and gets a somewhat better deal. But again, when there's one provider of vaccines, even something as powerful as the CDC and its purchasing power, they can't walk away. You know, they need that vaccine. So right. What do you do?
Well, we welcome phone calls. Elizabeth Rosenthal is our guest again today. She has another in her series, Paying Till It Hurts. The Price of Prevention is the July 2nd article. Vaccine costs are soaring. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org. Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show. We're on Twitter at K Dunn Show. She writes about a lot of things. She does, concentrates a great deal on Prevnar, which is a very expensive vaccine. It has been mandated in most states, and it would appear that the company, Pfizer, that's making this is getting a substantial profit. The price of this drug keeps going up as much as 10% from year to year. But there are problems with doctors, pediatricians being able to afford getting these vaccines and giving them. And so there's a problem with family practitioners who don't give the vaccines anymore because it's way too expensive. We also want to talk, and she mentions what the prices are in other countries, which I always find interesting information, and why it is that the vaccines are less expensive in other places on Earth. So we'll talk about that as well. Our phone lines are filled already, but keep the number in your head. We'll be with you momentarily. 800-486-8655. You are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Elizabeth Rosenthal is with us this hour, senior writer for the New York Times, doing a very important and interesting series this year, Paying Till It Hurts, on healthcare costs in the United States. It appears in the New York Times. And let's go to phone calls, starting with Jess in Milwaukee. Hi, Jess.
Hi, how you doing today? Right. Thanks for taking the call.
Sure.
But just to let you guys know something, you made a statement that it's a mandate and everybody has to have the immunizations in order to get into schools and so on, and that's simply not true. For most people who don't know, there is an out, if you will. If you have a philosophical, religious, health, or other objection, you can get exempted from it and still go to school. My children are not immunized, and we made a concerted effort and decision not to do that, and they have never had a problem going to school.
Why did you not immunize them?
Because when I was a kid, there was about 10 immunizations. Now there's about 33, and they keep coming out with more. I feel there's too many toxins in it. As an example, mercury is used as a stabilizer on most immunizations, and we know that's a toxin. So I don't feel like pumping my kids full of toxins.
And yet we've also had outbreaks of diseases that should be under control because young people are not being immunized, which is a focus of another article. But Elizabeth, you want to comment on that?
No, well, just that, yes, most states, I think probably every state, there are ways to opt out. I would point out that one of the reasons the doctors in San Antonio were concerned about the difficulty giving immunizations is that they had an outbreak of diphtheria there last year, which I believe may be still ongoing, and two babies died whose moms had not been immunized. So normally the immunity is transferred for the first months of life from the mom to the baby. So, you know, I know for everyone it's a personal decision, but there are downsides.
Mm-hmm. We go next to Liz in La Crosse. Hi, Liz.
Hi, good afternoon, and thank you for taking my call. I have kind of a question. I've noticed that other countries pay quite a bit less for medications, including immunizations. Is there a possibility the CDC could go through, say, Germany and get what we need for immunization, but at a substantial decrease in cost?
Well, that's a good question. The easy answer is No, we're not allowed to import drugs from other countries. That is being tested at the moment in Maine, which is allowing limited importation for personal use by patients.
Oh.
Focusing not from anywhere, but from certain countries. I know Canada and the UK are two of the countries, but again, that's for limited supplies for personal use. But the official position is that is of the FDA is that is not technically legal, but it's tolerated.
Hmm.
And it's being debated now. The larger issue, I guess, I was looking during our break. For example, the UK pays about under $100 for Prevnar that we pay $136 for. So there's a substantial savings. Although I would say, again, because Pfizer has a more or less a monopoly in much of the world in this kind of vaccine. No one has great bargaining power, but other countries can and do say to drug makers, you know, we think it's valuable, but the price is too high, and we're not going to use it unless you give us a better price. And they do get better prices. So I think a question is why we – and the CDC does that to a limited extent. But I guess the question is, you know, why – as with all pharmaceuticals, why are we paying more than the rest of the world?
Right.
Are we supporting research for the world, or are we just supporting profits for drug makers?
Yeah.
And is that right?
And I don't fully understand, Elizabeth, why other drug makers can't make Prevnar at this point.
There is a competing vaccine that's being – I forget which manufacturer makes it – that's available in some other countries. And perhaps over time the price will come down once there are two on the market. But what we see in the drug world is frequently two equivalent products or nearly equivalent products don't make a competitive market. You need three or four. As a follow-up to this story, I did a story on the price of digoxin, which is one of the oldest heart medicines known to man. It's been described for hundreds of years. It's off patent. It's generic. But the price has been escalating rapidly in the last year.
Oh.
And that's because at the moment there are only basically two or three providers of the drug on the U.S. market. And that's not enough to make real robust competition, apparently. It's, you know, two or three, they kind of look at each other and go, are you okay charging $30? And they go, yeah, I'm okay if you're okay.
Right.
I mean, there's not active collusion that anyone knows about. But to need to have a really good, robust, competitive market, there's a lot of evidence to suggest you need five products, not two.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Liz, for your call. Kevin in Baraboo is next. Hi, Kevin.
Hi. Yeah, I've got a related issue, although not completely. I had a knee replacement 4 years ago, and my good knee is no longer good, and it's looking at a replacement. But I had Hyaljin injections 5 years ago, and from my doctor, they were $70 a piece, which I thought was kind of a lot, but kind of a doable thing. Well, my new doctor, you know, said that I could get this triple shot. I never really asked what the price of it was, and trying to put my replacement off until next year. I do have a $3,000 deductible, and that's part of the reason I try to go every other year with stuff like that. And I kept on telling them, I tried to keep my prices or costs under $1,500 this year. So I got the price of the injection, which was a triple one. I thought, okay, maybe $300. Actually, it turned out to be $1,800.
Oh my gosh!
Woo! Yep. Wow.
And the cost for injecting it was over $300. So the whole thing came to over $2,100. So we're kind of having some issues with this, us old people, too.
And what's it for? What's the injection for?
The Hyaljin is kind of putting in some lubrication into the knee, kind of have bone on bone going on. It's sort of to put off the knee replacement a little bit. The first time I did this, I did that for 3 years before it didn't work anymore. Mm. So I was trying this, again, to, as I said, to put off the knee replacement because walking bone on bone is rather painful.
Right.
And so, like, I was expecting, like you said, for it to come around $300, and it came over $2,100.
Yeah. Ooh.
Wow.
That's a lot.
And did you ask your doctor why the price had increased so much? Because we see this with a lot of medicines. You know, you would think over time the price should go down, but often it goes up. And also what you see with vaccines as well is when they make these combined products, they often like massively escalate the price.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to be fighting this. I know. I guess my doctor should have told me, you can't afford this, Kevin.
Hmm.
So, well, that's about all my story. So I'm listening to the rest of it on the radio. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thanks for the call, Elizabeth.
You know, there is something related with the vaccines. Dr. Irvin, in fact, there are combined vaccines, which, you know, maybe take four of the individual vaccines and put them together. Obviously, if you were a parent, you would say, wow, one shot, that's what I want. But those combined vaccines are more expensive than the sum of the four shots.
Oh.
So to make it more affordable, she, for babies, will give the combined vaccines. But for the older kids, she says, no, I got to give you four shots because otherwise it just gets too expensive.
My. So how do they decide what they're going to charge? Prevnar, $136 a dose with some variation. Who makes up that dollar figure?
Well, the pharmaceutical companies do. I mean, it's the pediatricians will say that each month sometime or each year sometime late in the year they get a notice from Pfizer saying this is the price for Prevnar next year. Likewise, I sat with Dr. Irvin as she went through her vaccine purchases for the coming month. Every company that makes vaccines has a website or a phone number you call in, and it says, you know, it's a little bit disturbing to me because it's like shopping on Amazon, you
right.
know, hey, this month there's a good deal on a DPT vaccine, get it while it lasts. Mm. There were discounts for early purchase, you know, advanced purchases. There were if you bought it the last minute, you couldn't give it back. But if you paid a higher price, there were take-back clauses. So, you know, it is the way markets work, and we work on a market system. But there's something a little disconcerting about watching the way the prices go up and down depending on what. I don't know.
Yeah, really. And when you make some comparisons about what they used to cost, say even 40 years ago or so, holy cow, what a difference. Those vaccinations weren't that much 40 years ago.
Yeah, they were all a lot cheaper. Some of them have had improvements of sorts. You know, they may use a different base to make the vaccine. But on the whole, the older vaccines are not very different than they were, except the price is a lot more.
And explain to us, as you do in the article, Elizabeth, what exactly they do, vaccines?
Oh, they're really important because basically what they do is they show your immune system a kind of disguised version of a germ. So it will be a germ that can't actually cause the disease or a piece of the germ. So your immune system can recognize it and create an immune reaction against that germ so that when you actually encounter it, you have immune cells that will conquer it and you won't get sick. Or at least if you do get sick, you'll get a much milder case.
Mm-hmm. You also talk a little bit about the history of vaccines. So we didn't have patents many years ago, and the vaccines like polio came on the market in a different, or were developed in a different way, a better way perhaps?
Well, there are some differences in the development. When you look to the history of some of the newer vaccines, including Prevnar, many were – the original research was at university labs and was government supported, which is part of the controversy about the prices now. Originally, like when the Salk vaccine was developed, likewise came out of university labs and charity work. The March of Dimes, I believe, was heavily involved. And they decided not to patent it. It was in large part, I believe, because patent law was different at the time, and there wasn't the notion that you could patent a biological product, which these are. Mm-hmm. And also now what we see is there's this explosion of pharmaceutical patents, including patents for vaccines, that are not for the vaccine itself. They're for the process of making the vaccine. Mm. So drugs and vaccines are now protected by multiple patents. That makes it hard to just make a copy.
Mm-hmm. We welcome phone calls, more of them, for Elizabeth Rosenthal. Elizabeth has been writing this really informative, important series in the New York Times for this year on the cost of healthcare in this country, and we've interviewed her for every one of her articles. There was one in on July 2nd that she wrote, and we had not yet interviewed her, so that's why she's here today. It is titled, "The Price of Prevention, Vaccine Costs Are Soaring." She talked with pediatricians, with family practice doctors, pediatricians having to buy these sometimes, you know, on these like home shopping networks, almost on the internet, to get the cheapest possible price for this. Family practice doctors finding this too expensive, many of them saying they can no longer do vaccines, looking at what vaccines used to cost in this country and now cost, and what they cost in different countries, and paying special attention to the release of Prevnar, which is very, very expensive, quite effective, mandated now in most states, and why it is that it costs so much and only one company has this on the market. So reach us if you'd like, 800-486-8655, or you can send an email. That address is talk@wpr.org. I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Elizabeth Rosenthal with us until the end of this hour, and vaccines is what we're talking about, the cost of them. 800-486-8655 is our number, and we go to Bob in Madison. Hi, Bob.
Hello?
Hi, Bob. Go ahead.
I'm curious. Just a couple minutes ago, you were talking about, you know, you're basically shopping online and getting good deals or better deals or not good deals. And I'm curious if, you know, if a doctor or somebody goes online and gets a good deal on a drug, does the patient reap that benefit, or do the doctors keep that, or the clinic keep that? How does that work?
Who gets the money?
Right. Well, I think for many pediatricians, since they're losing money on vaccines normally, it's a technique they use to be able to keep giving vaccines. Now, this may be somewhat different, like a large pediatric group might be able to get a somewhat better price on some of the vaccines from the drug makers, and likewise might be able to negotiate good reimbursement from your insurer, in which case they might be making money on vaccines, and so any discounts they manage to get on the vaccines, you would have to ask them if they're keeping it or giving it out. I don't think anyone...
betting I wouldn't know the answer to that question.
Yeah, well, maybe. You know, I think no one is making tons of money on vaccines. It's not a profit center for practices. So I can't tell you what individual practices are doing, but I can tell you when I watched Dr. Irvin shop for vaccines, there were no great bargains. There was kind of expensive and less expensive, but there wasn't anything that I would say, wow, that's a really great price. I mean, when you look at it in terms of the serious disease they prevent, it's a good, vaccines are a good deal, but that doesn't mean necessarily from a public health perspective, you can charge what you want.
Okay. All right. Well, you've answered my question. Thank you.
But to put this financial thing in perspective, you quote this other doctor, I can't remember where he was, who's had a pediatric practice since 1982, and he tells you, or she, it might be a she. It was a he. Charged $22 for a two-month well-child checkup, $8 added on for the polio vaccine, $8 for the vaccine against diphtheria, pertussis, and tetanus. And he said to you, and I'm sure we were making money on it.
Right. And I think you know, vaccines used to be pennies. So you charged $8 and you were making money. Now, obviously, they're triple digits, many of them. And what happens is the pediatricians go to the insurers and say, look, you know, the price of Prevnar just went up. You have to increase our reimbursement. And, you know, eventually the insurers will come back and go, okay, but there's a time lag there. And a lot of pediatricians talked about being stuck in the sense that they were getting reimbursed at last year's prices for a vaccine that just was going up and up and up. Hmm. So, you know, I think that, and I should point out, you know, that pediatricians are generally not well paid in medicine. They're among the lowest paid specialists. So these are, you're not talking about, you know, doctors who are rolling in dough who can afford to eat something, you know, eat the vaccines. I mean, you know, the cost of the vaccines because they're making lots of money elsewhere. Pediatricians are not. And they're mostly incredibly committed to what they do.
Yeah.
You don't become a pediatrician to become rich.
Well, it's such an important specialty. Why aren't they better paid? Another subject, but you know the answer,
another subject. <I'm> sure. They don't do procedures.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
And kids, you know, we don't invest in kids the way we invest in adults.
Yeah. Thanks, Bob, for your call. Laura in Madison. Hi.
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 Hi. So what I'm hearing you talk about is very similar, I think, to the recent drug therapy that's come out for hepatitis C, and I believe the manufacturer is Gilead. And if I have been following this correctly, I think even they're being investigated for overcharging for this drug therapy. And just didn't know, Doctor, if you had any, any information or perspective on that.
Well, it is similar in that it is what we see increasing scrutiny to the price of pharmaceuticals generally. Sovaldi is the drug against hepatitis C, and Gilead is the manufacturer. It's priced, for anyone who hasn't read this, at $86,000, I believe, between $84,000 and $86,000 for a six-week course, which cures hepatitis C in a lot of patients. You know, I think the discussion is, okay, what's that worth? Hepatitis C in a relatively small number of patients will cause very serious disease. Many people who get hepatitis C will not suffer from serious consequences from it. But you will treat people with Sovaldi to prevent that potential. So it kind of has a similar feel to the vaccine controversy. There has been greater scrutiny of the pricing because several senators, I believe, have asked the company to defend the pricing because obviously that will put a huge dent in public health budgets insurance budgets if we're paying $86,000 for a six-week course. In terms of overall spending, you know, there are a lot more kids than people with hepatitis C, but it does bring up a lot of the same issues. And I think the consumers in this country are starting to get more interested, more involved, and a little bit more sensitive to the issue of, wait a second, what is this worth? Now, the drug makers, both with Sovaldi, the hepatitis C drug, and with the vaccine, say, you know, this is an amazing product. It's worth a lot because it will save a life. You know, true. But how much of it is, how much is that worth? Boy, that's a societal decision that different countries deal with very differently than we do.
Hmm.
Yep. Interesting. Thank you for your perspective.
Thank you very much. Thanks for the call, Laura. Lines are open if you want to join us, 800-486-8655. We don't want to get into a discussion of autism and vaccines during this hour because we can go in that direction forever. But you do talk about some of the reasons that the vaccine like Prevnar are more expensive are these trials, which you say once included thousands of volunteers. Now we've got way, way more than that because of possible side effects like autism, even though studies have concluded that the worries are unfounded. Nonetheless, the worries have been stated, and so we got to test all kinds of people now?
Well, the U.S. generally does require more extensive testing of pharmaceuticals than other countries, including vaccines. I would direct people. I did another follow-up to this vaccine story about a vaccine issue that was rather personal for me. It was about the fact that there was an outbreak of meningitis B at Princeton last year, where my daughter was a student, and there was no vaccine available in the U.S. at the time, even though there was a vaccine against that available in Canada, the UK, Australia. And the problem was basically it's a vaccine that's used to contain outbreaks at the moment. And the drug manufacturer, in that case, Novartis, had decided that it wasn't worth, and it truly wasn't worth in terms of their shareholders, the extensive process of doing vaccine trials in the United States to get that approved for use in just rare outbreaks. Ultimately, the CDC and the FDA and New Jersey Health Authorities had to get involved to get that vaccine into the country as an exceptional, and they called it an investigational new drug, even though it really wasn't investigational in the sense that it was being used in many other countries already. Mm-hmm. So I think, yes, we are very cautious and, you could say historically for good reasons about vaccines. There's been a lot of controversy surrounding vaccines, obviously. So the testing is expensive. But again, your tests are done. So why does once you go on the market, your tests are done, long done usually. And so why does the price go up?
Yeah. Very good question. How many dead ends are there? Is this a very complicated to develop a vaccine? You test and you get 99 wrong paths before you finally link onto the right one, Elizabeth?
Yeah, I think that's certainly a valid argument that you hear from pharmaceutical manufacturers. There are tons of dead ends. Again, it's a question of how many dead ends versus how many successes and what the success is worth. Critics will point out that though there are dead ends, pharmaceutical manufacturers spend a lot of money on advertising and promotion. Many of the studies that I looked at for Prevnar, which are probably classified as research on a drug maker's budget, are basically studies proving that it's that are devoted to expanding the use of the drug or vaccine. So, there's basic research and there's research that's more or less kind of market-based research, which we don't distinguish between very well. And I also should point out that in many of these vaccines, by the time a drug company actually owns the patent and owns the product, the basic research has been done often in government-financed labs and universities, at smaller drug companies. So the risk is not the risk of doing the research that you don't know if it's going to work out. The risk is that you've paid, $10 million or $100 million to acquire a company that did the research. So it's risk. It's financial risk. It's not really drug risk.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to Glenn in Eau Claire. Hi, Glenn.
Hi. See, I just was wondering in the talk about where the profits go that the drug companies are making on these vaccines, after so long, and why they have to keep increasing the prices. But I just wonder if maybe that extra money is actually going into research and developing new products, as well as defending the old products against the lawsuits and whatnot that might be coming against it.
Yes, I think some of it is. And that's why it's really hard to determine what's right. But I think other countries are much more aggressive in trying to tease out, well, what's being used for research? What's being used for advertising? One thing that always comes up in this discussion is the United States, along with New Zealand, I believe, is the only country that allows for direct-to-consumer pharmaceutical advertising. So, and that is, as any of us who watch TV know, they spend a lot of money on that. Mm-hmm. So, do I feel good about a new drug being expensive to support advertising? Personally, not. but, you know, that's the law in this country and it's legal. So it's very hard to tease out what of that profit is being plowed back into research and what of that profit is being used for things that we don't feel so good about, perhaps.
Well, why don't we know that and shouldn't we know that and who would have to find out for us?
Well, presumably a pharmaceutical maker knows what they're spending on those different parts. I would direct people to, we've started a Facebook group associated with our series. It's a Pain Till It Hurts Facebook group, and some of our members, it's pretty new, have put up some interesting data about the development costs of some of the more expensive new drugs. I think there's something on Sovaldi, the hepatitis C drug, and one for cystic fibrosis. So, you know, it's a very, like dissecting Wall Street books, it's very complicated to figure out what's what. And, I don't know that there's a simple answer where anyone can say this drug is worth X. I would note with Pfizer, one of the issues which you just have to note, I don't know that I would attribute the exact pricing to anything, is it lost patents on some of its most profitable drugs over the last few years. Mm. So it, like many pharmaceutical manufacturers, is, you know, they're not charities. They have responsibility to their shareholders to make the most of the products they have. And it would be fiscally irresponsible to their investors to do otherwise. So I think part of our kind of the trouble we have with pharmaceuticals and drug makers is we feel like they're making things that are a public good, but that's not their business model.
And what about other countries? How are they handling this? Does the government deal for research into new vaccines? Are they private companies doing this, or does it vary widely?
No, it's mostly private companies.
Is it?
The difference is, and mostly the same companies that we get vaccines from, the difference is that they, almost all other countries negotiate really tough with drug makers. Now, you could say they may be negotiating such low prices that we're effectively in the U.S. with our high prices subsidizing the research and development for people in Germany who are going to get this great deal.
Right.
That may be true, but then I think our as consumers and as politicians, we have to think about, are we comfortable with that? Is that fair to our children and our national budget to structure things that way? And what would happen if we could bargain harder? Would that mean that drug makers would not, you know, that other countries wouldn't be able to get such prices? Maybe the prices would go up elsewhere a little bit.
And I'm wondering about the process of when we even decide that we needed a vaccine against something. When Pfizer decided that this vaccine to guard against ear infections and pneumonia would be a good thing to go, when we decided to try and get a vaccine for AIDS, what about Ebola, which is experiencing this outbreak in Africa? Could there be a vaccine against that? Do people get working on that right when there is such an explosion of the disease?
Well, I think it's a motivation, but you always have to wonder how you can monetize what you're doing. You know, how much can you charge for? And that's always been an issue with some of the diseases that are more prevalent in the developing world, like malaria. You know, who if you're relying on a profit model, is there really good profit in vaccines for rare or diseases that affect predominantly poorer nations?
Yes.
So I think that would be an issue with Ebola, and it's an issue with a lot of these new vaccines, which the companies will sell at a much, much discounted rate through a consortium that involves the World Health Organization to the poorest countries. You know, I think someone noted in the story that Prevnar, or the Pfizer sells Prevnar for, I think, $3.50 through that program. Is that charitable, or are they? I was told by one source that that's probably their incremental cost for producing extra vaccines once they have the machinery in place for selling them at higher prices in the developed world. But, you know, what's the right price is a really hard, hard thing to determine, as it is for, you know, my iPhone. What's the right price? I don't know. It's but this is a social decision, and vaccines are such a public good that it deserves public discussion.
Yeah. Well, heavens knows the New York Times is priceless. So,
yeah, if only everyone thought that.
Absolutely. Thanks, Elizabeth, very much for being with us again. Really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Elizabeth Rosenthal, senior writer for the New York Times, her series, which has been so good, and we've interviewed her each time she has a new segment, Paying Till It Hurts, is in the New York Times all year. We were referencing her July 2nd piece. And they have, as she said, a Paying Till It Hurts community, which is fascinating to read through. And it's on our Facebook page right now. If you'd like to go there, it's the Kathleen Dunn Show. Thanks to KP Whaley for producing this hour. And thanks to KP for on-air production. And thanks to Elizabeth Rosenthal. And to you, great conversations ahead.